Good afternoon. Welcome to the Healthy Aging Show. I'm Dennis Batuas.
I'm Dawn Del Greco. I'm the one watching the watch,
okay,
so to speak.
And we are talking about issues about getting older, intelligent aging, lessons for life. And we're brought to you by Comfort Keepers, 600 locations, a lot of caregivers around, around the country, providing everything from a few hours to 24/7 to live-ins to assist people in being able to stay safe and independent in their own home. Lower Fairfield County, 629-5029. Anywhere else, ComfortKeepers.com. We are talking about maturity, aging, and understanding the ramifications of the aging process on the caregiver, the person, and employers and employees.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with MetLife Mature Markets Institute Executive Director, Dr. Sandra Timmerman. And welcome. Thank you for coming.
I'm really happy to be here.
Well,
Thanks for inviting me.
And you're a neighbor. You're just up the street, more or less, in Westport, Connecticut. Dr. Timmerman's group.
She's actually a gerontologist.
She is a gerontologist. And she is with MetLife. And the Mature Markets Institute has become a gold standard in the production and distilling of information on aging. And we've seen much of it with regard to the effects on employees and employers. But it goes well beyond that. And basically, you're looking at what affects the employee outside their job and how it affects their job.
Right. I mean, any issue of people over age 50, and sometimes I think the mature market is defined even lower than 50. It's beginning to get to 45 now, but making transitions from work to retirement and then into older age and then all the life events that take place around that. And one of them, of course, is caregiving. And so many caregivers now are working. These are family caregivers, not paid caregivers. But that becomes a big issue that I think is often unrecognized by employers.
But how did MetLife come to even focus on this particular topic?
Well, we have a large number of clients who are big employers, and we want to get some information in front of these corporations. They're big corporations and also smaller companies about some of the issues around aging. And I think that it's important for all of us to get public information about some of these transitions and about aging to the general public. And then it reflects back on the company as a good thing to do from an education point of view. And we also work with our employees in the company to help them understand some of the transitions that people are going through so they can better serve them with products and with their relationship with the clients.
Well, this is the other end of the spectrum, because for so long, companies were having to deal with the child care aspects of the employee's life. And now, because number one, we're getting older and people are living longer, the care issues that they have to deal with at the other end are just as great, and they're unheralded, for one. And in some cases, and I did ask in one of the questions, somewhat stigmatized.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we always say childcare was the issue of the last decade, and maybe this will be the decade of the elder care and the elder caregiver, because you know, we certainly see a lot of information about caregiving in the newspapers these days, and so many of us have gone through it personally. But somehow or another, it hasn't really been incorporated as much by employers as recognizing that this is a life stage that people are going through, and they're suffering from a financial perspective, an emotional perspective, a social perspective, and that impacts their job. And many employers are trying to have a very good workplace where people have nice benefits but also are productive. So I think in the next several years, this issue will definitely come to the forefront.
Well, I think, and one of the things that I've been saying as we've gotten more and more entrenched in this whole aging information process, is that a lot of the legislation that we've been hoping would come along that would be both preventive as well as focused more on care to the elderly and freeing up or providing some kind of financial access, that as the legislators themselves age or are dealing with aging issues, that they would become more sensitized to it and kind of stand back and put themselves in the shoes of the elderly or of the caregivers. So far, that doesn't seem to be happening, but that's the reality. If you can make that psychological change, you have a better understanding of what's going on.
We do find with some of the large corporations or small ones, if the CEO or some of the top officers are going through the caregiving situation, they begin to really get it, and then they think about what their employees are going through. So you can always listen from a personal perspective as well as a human resources perspective to the signals that you're getting from the community.
Well, however it's accomplished, it's good that it's eventually happening.
It's a different progression too, because with the younger families, you have that child care and camp and different opportunities for care during the day. And a child is going to continue progressing, becoming more independent as time goes on, whereas an elder care isn't necessarily going to follow that course.
It's not going to follow that course. It's just the opposite. It's getting more and more dependent, and the length of time that someone can be in need of care can be longer, and it's progressively more intense.
I think that's one of the issues, really, because some of the big companies have very rich benefits through their employee assistance programs. They have geriatric care management, they have information and referral, they allow flex time, but many times people who are suddenly faced with caring for an older parent or an older relative never think of the employer as a place to go, and like you said, maybe they don't want to declare themselves because it happens so suddenly, and you think, what are we going to do with mom? She's, you know, all of a sudden she had a stroke. She can't stay at home. Or maybe it's the caregiver creep. I like that concept too, because you start maybe helping out with the housework. You help deliver groceries. You check with mom and dad. And then pretty soon the situation gets worse and worse and you're spending more and more hours. And it's the caregiver creep syndrome.
And I think we expect that we should be able to handle it. I think it's surprising to us when we're caregivers that at some point we realize that it's quite overwhelming, that there are other resources that we need, and we have to come to grips with the fact that we just can't do all of it.
Yeah, and we're
working. And shouldn't have to.
Too, and work becomes more and more demanding, you know, with 24/7 BlackBerry access.
Well, and that's a whole topic that we're going to talk about separately on technological stress, but it has a bearing on it. But the sandwich generation, there's a term that was coined probably 20 years ago. When you look at the statistics in some of your reports, clearly a lot of the caregivers that are caring for parents or grandparents are also caring for children. And that's a real tight and tough spot for people to be in. And then lay on top of that the economy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we look at the average age of a caregiver, and some studies say around 46, 47, others say 50, but women delayed having children. So it's likely that they're having children at home at the same time that they might be caring for their parent. And there's also the expression of club sandwich generation. Have you ever heard that one?
No, that's new.
It's a good one.
Layers of care that you might be providing. You might be providing care to your kids at the same time you've got a mother and maybe a grandmother or an aunt or a neighbor that you're friendly with, and it becomes more complex than ever. So I like that terminology. As families get smaller, you don't have as many resources to draw from, and there you are juggling not only one caregiving situation, but another one.
Well, you know, it's almost with an apology that I sometimes talk about the services of a home care agency, that it's a shame that as an industry that it has to exist, because up until a point, we were relying upon family and friends, and now we've become, because of technology, because of the economy, because of transportation, we've spread out all over the place, and so we have resources that are available, albeit not the most desirable thing that anybody ever wanted to have in their life. But as we live longer, we become more and more prone to needing someone to assist us.
On the other hand, I think home care agencies or adult day services, which many communities have, certainly in this area they do, are helpful to the family caregiver and will allow the family caregiver to provide care longer than they might have otherwise, because there's so much burnout. So it allows a person to stay in the workforce, and we all know that retirement savings are so low now, it's really important for people to stay in the workforce and not give up their work to provide the family care. So if they can manage juggling their own family caregiving with professional services, I think that's a good thing too.
And your studies were very specific on the statistics as to why they should focus on that. The impact on the caregivers specifically.
And financially. and emotionally.
Yeah, there was a lot of ands that went with that. I was surprised to see actually the bar coding, if you will, or the percentages with particular ages, as well as the impact if they don't have enough support on their actual health.
We were finding, we did a study recently on working caregivers and their health status and then the impact on employers. But we did find that elder care is associated with greater health problems. So, for example, and this was a case study of a large multinational corporation. We studied 17,000 of their U.S. employees, and about 12% said they were caring for somebody over age 65. And then what we did is to compare their health status with the health status of the general population of employees. And we found that they're much more likely to have diabetes, to undergo stress, to have depression. So there's sort of a mental illness component as well as a physical illness, COPD, hypertension, some of these chronic conditions as well. And not only that, but we found that they are less likely to take care of themselves, and they're also taking more health risks, which would be smoking and alcohol use. So you've got sort of this triple whammy.
It's like a ticking bomb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to say, well, it depends on the person, and there's certain subsets of the population in this particular study that seemed to be more prone to one of these than the other. But just in general, I think that employers were sitting up and taking notice and really thinking about caregiving as a health issue for their employees, and then also a cost issue, because mm-hmm. it impacts the bottom line. If employees are not as healthy, they're using more health benefits, which costs the company more money. So it's sort of a win-win situation for the company to provide some of these wellness services.
And I think your study, as far as the productivity, getting now to the bottom line for the business itself of the productivity loss that can happen.
Yeah,
besides,
it's not only the health care costs for the, you know, premiums for insurance, not for the consumer, but for the company.
Right.
But it's also how much productivity is lost because of working caregivers.
Well, absenteeism, they coming in late, leaving early, unexpected reasons to leave. And, you know, one thing, and it was one of the questions towards the end that I had, but the fact that you've got tangible costs that can be measured in a financial statement, then you have, albeit it affects the financial statement, but they're kind of intangible. What is the effect of the burning out caregiver on their coworkers and on the business in general? Because as someone starts to fray, they may react in many different ways, and it often can be an unproductive reaction, and it can alienate coworkers. It could actually create a divisive relationship with a valuable client. So it could go well beyond the paycheck and the costs, and you could lose business as a result of someone who just with assistance can get through and be that valuable employee that they've always been.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I don't have any stats on that.
No, I'm sure. No, but I'm sure that there's some case studies out there.
I think when you do sort of interviews with employees or employers, and they find that one of their employees is constantly on the telephone trying to make arrangements with doctors, or they get a phone call from the home health aide, oh, you've got to come home right away. The stress of that has to spill over on your family life, but on your work life in particular. And I think it's hard to compartmentalize it because people are tired. They might be staying up late, particularly if you're caring for someone with Alzheimer's who the sundowner syndrome, they're up at night, and we don't really recognize this in the workplace because we expect people to put in a full day's work. So that's the balance an employer has to provide to give enough benefits to that person to allow the person to have a less stressful life. At the same time, the employer is expecting productivity and getting the job done. And so what's the balance? That's really the question.
But I think that the caregiving employee recognizes the impact that their caregiving has on their ability to produce at work. And one of your graphs I thought was very interesting, where it studied the effect of personal life on work life, and work life negatively impacted their personal life, and that was an inverse of work life negatively impacting their personal life, and the caregiver versus the non-caregiver. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there was a great big difference where the caregiving employee found that they were impacting their work life by these extraneous but necessary activities.
Now, one of the comments, too, specifically said that the caregivers tend to cut out exercise, which you know nutrition's going to go as a combination with that, because you are probably getting home and getting takeout food on the way home and may not have the opportunity to plan that meal as you'd like.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you don't take time for yourself. And we found in the study that the caregivers were not doing basic health screening either. For example, women getting mammograms, they really don't feel they have time for it. And as you said, taking time for exercise, it's almost impossible if you've got someone at home caring for your loved one and you've got to get home. You don't have the luxury to
go to the gym.
Mm-hmm. And yet, if you don't take care of yourself, you know, you've got to take care of the caregiver in order for the caregiver to carry on.
Absolutely.
Right. I do want to say something about work.
Before you do that, I want to take a break.
Okay,
and then
good.
We're going to come back on the other side and we're going to continue with Dr. Sandra Timmerman of MetLife Mature Markets Institute talking about an aging and graying population. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to the Healthy Aging Show, and we're talking to Dr. Sandra Timmerman of MetLife Mature Markets Institute. We were talking at the break about the respite that work provides.
The oasis.
Essentially,
yeah.
Where people look forward to going to work to get out of a caregiving situation because of its intensity.
You know, a friend of mine was talking with me one time caring for a family member, and I jokingly had said to her, just think what a bad day at the office, how much easier that will be in the future. And she called me about a year later. We were on another topic, and she said, I remember you saying that to me. I'm having a really bad day at work, and you're right. It's not as bad as it would have typically been prior to my caregiving experience. And since then, I think a lot of us, including myself, have come to understand that statement that I made.
I think, too, the social aspects of having coworkers, and we did find in our study, while there is a bit of a stigma, people afraid to tell their supervisors, or perhaps bigger policy doesn't quite allow the support for caregiving, among coworkers and with, you know, some of the managers, just being able to have somebody to talk to, whether it's about caregiving or just about going shopping or what's happening in people's lives, I think makes a big difference, because as a caregiver, you are often isolated when you're back home taking care of your loved one.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, I remember friends not wanting to necessarily call and tell me their problems, but actually their problems were a lot more interesting than mine, since I already knew mine.
You know, one thing that going through this process does, it puts life into perspective for a lot of people, because it gives you a better sense of what's really important and what's not, and you walk away realizing, don't sweat the small stuff.
However, Dennis, when you're the caregiver coming into that working community and you have that perspective, your coworkers may not have had that experience. So they may be very heavily into, you know, something that seems very upsetting for the day that really in the end is not a life-threatening situation.
But that allows you to let that roll off. You might have engaged in it and it might have bothered you before, but now you're looking at it from a more mature experience.
It's kind of a luxury, actually,
when
you can do that.
You know, it's funny, when I go to parties now, it used to be parties we talked about children and PTA meetings and childcare problems, and now in my age group, we go to parties and everybody's talking about mom and dad. And I think your point about the workforce, there's certainly a lot of younger coworkers who are still wrapped up in their particular life stage, and you know, we all have these transitions of sorts. So there is a bit of an intergenerational, I can't say conflict, but little lack of understanding of this particular phase.
I've often felt that we need a sensitivity at younger ages to the plight of an older person, because, you know, in the absence of time, there goes you and I, because everything that an older person aspired to in youth, we did too, perhaps at a different point in time, but there's no difference, and it's just we have the luxury of looking at them and saying, I'm not sure that I want to age in quite the same way. What can I do to impact that?
Well, maybe with more multi-generational households. Again, I know my grandmother lived with us my entire childhood life, and then she stayed with my parents. That was her home. And that at first seemed to be bygone days, but now we're finding with the economy, I was just mentioning to Dawn earlier, that for the oldest boomers, one out of every four of these boomers has adult children living at home with them now. And
I'm raising my hand.
Might have a grandchild there as well, because that seems to be happening with the economy, and maybe this will be a trend, and maybe it'll be a good thing.
Well, I don't mean to sound feminist in this process, but the women are always seeming to be at the core with this. So a challenge being a caregiver, probably maybe having started the family a little bit later. And the temptation, I think, might be to leave the workforce. So how do women navigate this process?
Yeah, that's a really good point because, you know, women have been, I do want to talk about men too, because we are finding more and more men.
Well, I saw a higher percentage of caregivers were men.
In this particular
in that
sample,
study, yes.
But generally, it could be anywhere from 35% to 40%. But let me finish this other point because I think
it's
we
got there first, Dennis. We women
also,
got there
we
first.
Do, we do the heavy lifting.
You can
too.
Just sort of wait
the
on
men
that.
Make yeah. the
with,
arrangements.
Without you, there wouldn't be any reason to care.
We found that when we looked at the differences, the men were more apt to make arrangements, and the women were the ones who do
There's
the
probably
heavy
a good
lifting.
Balance somewhere
but
in between.
Anyway, you're two women in this studio.
I'm not going to win.
Men,
I'm not going to win. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I will talk about men.
I'm wrong.
I think it's important. But I just to answer your point, women have generally made less money. They are not in higher level jobs in the same way, and they live longer. You know, they're likely to outlive their spouses, and so it's really important for them to continue to have an income. And if you drop out of the workforce prematurely, you really jeopardize your retirement spending, I think, that and your retirement security. And what we have been thinking is that caregivers should consider, if you drop out, say, before you vest in a company, you could lose your 401k, you could lose your pension benefits if you have any. It might be better for you to get some home care help or explore adult daycare, which is a good alternative. It's a lower cost alternative, and it's a really wonderful community-based program that allows you to stay in the workforce longer and really think through your own security, because you could live to be 100. That's really the likely possibility. And if you're alone and you need money, where are you going to get it at age 80 if you haven't built up enough of a nest egg?
And certainly maintaining that, participating with the wellness programs, which a lot of corporations are offering as well, which is important. Like you said, that maintaining of your own health, which caregivers tend not to do.
One of the reasons that this study can be important to employers, many employers, as I mentioned, have these elder care services, geriatric care management, or information. And they also have wellness programs. And in fact, the wellness programs are really important to them because it would help reduce health care costs for a corporation or an employer. But somehow, the dots have never been connected specifically between caregivers and their need for taking part in wellness programs, stress reduction, or exercise in a gym. You know, some companies have gyms or they give you membership in a gym. And it's important to the employer to realize that if the caregiver could participate in smoking cessation programs or some of these things, that would ultimately help the employee and then help their bottom line too.
Okay, we're going to take another break and we're going to come back on the other side. We're talking with Dr. Sandra Timmerman, MetLife Mature Markets Institute. Be right back.